are all miracles and must make the most of our limited time here. Each of us have these unique gifts to contribute, and it's our job to develop these gifts and give them away. The preschool SLP is about working smarter to create real change in ourselves and in others. Being an SLP is a mission. Let's discuss topics that matter. What are the game-changing strategies? How can we treat the whole child? How can we create the shiniest versions of ourselves and of our clients? We're here at the drawing board for a reason. Together, let's create better. Thank you for joining me at the drawing board today. I am going to pose a very challenging question to you, and it's going to be hard for you to answer this question. And I'm not sure if you're going to be able to answer this question, and I'm going to tell you it's okay. It's okay if you cannot answer this question. You are not alone. So the question is this. Are you legal in your AAC practice in the schools? So if you're working with children using AAC devices in the schools, you're going to experience firsthand there's a discord between the law and what is current practice. So the relationship between the law and practice in AAC is a very clunky one. Today, we're in the middle of a law to practice leg. What's happening is our laws are ahead of our practice. So in this case, our scientific knowledge of best practices in AAC and how to implement the best practices in AAC is falling far behind what the legal expectations are. If you told me today that you are implementing evidence-based practice in AAC, I'd respond that you are either unconsciously or consciously lying. There simply are insufficient studies to demonstrate what best practice looks like in the public schools. Instead, right now, we're engaging in something known as research-based practice. It's not evidence-based practice. It's research-based in that we base it on some theory. We base it on implementation methods from other fields, such as early intervention. We base it on small studies that involve less children that you have fingers. And these studies are largely subjective and qualitative in nature. There's no gold standard studies that we're drawing from with large numbers of participants where there's a randomly controlled trial in which there's an alternate intervention variable that's being studied in a non-biased manner. That's not what's happening in our AAC research. It is slim pickings. So we're taking these small case studies. We're taking research from other disciplines. We're taking research that's theoretical based, and we're trying to do the best we can with it. So it's not evidence-based practice. Evidence-based practice means that there were clinical efficacy studies in which you put it into practice on a clinical level, you tested it, and it was effective or it wasn't effective. That's not what we're looking at. We're looking at research-based. So it's very, very subjective. It's qualitative what we're looking at. We're doing the best we can with the little that we have. And this is where we are in terms of our research base. It's very small. It's very unreliable. We have these expectations that are very high. Let's cover these expectations of what we're supposed to be doing Monday morning in our practice. What are the legal expectations? These expectations are based on a January 2024 24-page brief by the Department of Education. There's four expectations that stand out that I want to cover. So the first one is that assistive technology must be considered at every IEP or every IFSP meeting, period, for every child. So are we doing that? Check. Odds are, I think you're doing that. We're legal. We're following the law. Let's look at number two. Schools are responsible for fully funding, 100%, any devices and services the team determines are necessary. So this could be low tech or high tech. Are we doing that? Many districts are. We're funding either low tech or high tech, the assistive technology devices. Number three, this is one I really like. And this says an assistive technology assessment is not a prerequisite for providing assistive technology devices and services. So in the past, there was this idea, well, this child is non-speaking. Do they need a device? Would they benefit from a device? What would be the best device for them? We have a consultant in the district, and it's going to take about a month or two for this consultant to come in and to spend a half hour, an hour with this child and determine whether the child needs a device, what that device is, what the program would be. This person that simply spends a half hour, an hour with a child. Now, to me, this is a step that just adds red tape, another bureaucratic step that moves the child a month or two further away from getting a voice. We want to give this child a voice right from day one. We do not have time for this middleman or middle lady nonsense is the way I look at it. We don't need an AAC fairy in all of our school districts that comes in and drops in and knows the child for a half hour and makes these important decisions. This is the job of the person that knows the child the most, the child's intervention team. So I'm very happy that the Department of Education made clear in January 2024 that this is not necessary. This is not a prerequisite for getting the child an assistive technology device. Number four, this is the final one. Now, this is where we're going to find the lag. Number four is this. Listen carefully. This is what we want. Schools are responsible for training the student, the parents, and educators on the AAC devices use. This is when things get very tricky. And if you feel like, oh, this is the hardest part, you are not alone. And there's a reason this is such a big task that the law is asking out of schools. So the law says, schools, the expectations under IDEA is this. Number one, train the student. Number two, train the parents. Number three, train the educators on this device's use. School system, this is your responsibility. And I'm going to tell you, we have some roadblocks here. Why is this so hard to implement? Why is there this lag in that these are the legal expectations? And this is where we are in practice. And the first reason is this: we simply do not have resources allocated for training the students, parents, and educators in the AAC device use. If you look at the average speech pathologist, their issues are caseloads and paperwork. And they're spending every minute of the day in therapy, and they're spending every minute of their nights and their lunch hours completing the paperwork. So where is this time that's going to be necessary to provide for training, to provide for parent coaching, to provide for teacher collaboration, and ensuring that an AAC device is used across the child's scholastic and home and natural environments? If there's just no allocation there for the time. So we can't make time. Time is your most valuable commodity. I take time very seriously, which is why I'm a member of the SIS membership, because I need to save time. That's why, even though I'm a fitness instructor, I go to Orange Theory. Time is my most valuable commodity. Your time is priceless. That's one issue. We do not have time within our schedules allocated for trainings. Number two, the second big barrier for putting this legal precedence into practice is that we do not know what strategies are effective in implementing AAC in a classroom environment, in a home environment, even in the therapeutic environment. As I mentioned before, we have slim pickings when it comes to AAC research. We are looking largely at subjective, qualitative, small case studies. Many of these studies, we're talking about less than 5 children are studied in them. So our data to tell us what is evidence-based, which strategies are effective, which strategies aren't effective, we really are not clear on that. So that's why we can't say we're doing evidence-based practice. We don't have the efficacy research, really, in which we're comparing approaches in a manner which is non-biased, in a manner which is under random assignment. We don't have that research. So we can't walk around and saying this is evidence-based practice. We can call it research-based. It's based on some theory. It's based on some research, but it has not proven itself in terms of clinical efficacy. That's another roadblock, is that we really don't know what we're doing. We don't have the time, and we really don't know what we're doing. We don't know if what we're doing is actually best practice or not. We just don't have the research to determine that. We are in the dark. Why else is there this issue in which this is what the legal precedent is? It's ahead of us, and the practice is lagging behind. Number three is we don't have systems and processes. So where is the model? Where is the district or the school or even the classroom of systems and processes that have shown we have done this and we have done this effectively and you can replicate this process in your own setting? We don't have that. We don't have it shown and proven in the public school system, a manner in which you can teach parents, in which you can train staff, in which you can teach students effectively in AAC devices, where it's been done not only on a school level, but even on a classroom level or district level or a statewide level. So this has not been done yet, the systems and processes. So how do we put the systems and processes in place when we have no model? Not only do we not have an evidence-based model that has proven clinical efficacy, but we don't even have a model to begin with. This is another reason why we have this lag. We have the legal mandate, which is like, this is what you're supposed to be doing today. But we're not doing it. We're behind. We don't have systems and processes that we can replicate, that someone else has done. No one has been there or done that. We don't have our Christopher Columbus. There's no model to follow. When we look at all of these areas of why there's a lag and why this is the legal expectations and this is our practice, and there's a lag, and we're falling far behind what the expectations are legally, there's real reasons for that. And that is A, we don't know what works and what doesn't work. B, we don't have time allocated to training. C, we don't have systems and processes to follow or to replicate. So when we look at these issues, we are in the dark. What are we to do today? And what we can do today is to innovate practice using the research that we do have. do the best you can do. We're going to stumble right now. It's not your fault. You're not alone. You are doing this in innovating practice in the dark. There is a very real lag in more ways than one from what the legal expectations are and from what we're able to deliver on a practice level on Monday morning. But the good news is that we have a light. We have the star, and that is the legal precedent. Those are the high expectations. If you don't have high expectations, you are not going anywhere. Challenge creates change. What we're going to do today is we are going to innovate practice. We're going to innovate practice together, and we're going to roll up our sleeves, and we're going to make the world a better place one child at a time. You are always going to be first. And yes, you will fail. And yes, you'll have your wins. And yes, as a result, you're going to get better. We're going to improve together. Thank you so much for joining me this week. I would love it if you join me for the month of April. I'm very excited. I'm going to be presenting for speechpathology.com, which is SP.com. And I'll be presenting a 4-week series on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time live. And this is going to be on autism. We're going to dive into augmentative communication the first week of the autism series. I think you are going to love it. I want you to join me live. And not only join me live, give me a shout out. Be like, hey, I love your podcast, Kalyvas SLP. The Preschool SLP is my favorite podcast. Just let me know that I'm not alone as I work to innovate practice with you. Also, if you haven't checked out my book, The 32 Lessons That Create Lifelong Change in Autism Intervention. This is on Audible, and it's also on paperback at Amazon. This is in a case study sort of format in which I share very, very short vignettes of experiences in 20 years of working with children with autism. So I think you're really going to love that, especially if you just listen to it. That won't take much of your time at all. I will see you next Thursday. Just keep your eyes on the light and having high expectations, and together we are better.